Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So there's a lot going on. Jeff Carlin and I are sitting down talking. Trump is killing Biden by 10% in one poll that's driven everyone crazy on the left, particularly most of the media, and I'm sure media in Chicago as well. The border, he's failing on the border by 23%, and Donald Trump has a colossal 20-point lead over Biden with young voters. But that could be an outlier. Who knows? Because I was predicting a red wave last election, and there was no red wave. So I stand corrected, right? I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. Do you, Jeff?
No. Yeah, China, that sound is liberal hair on fire. Democrats are having issues, that's for sure. to put it lightly, I mean, the wheels have come off in a lot of places. And, you know, Chicago is, everybody is seeing for what it is, hopefully. Yeah, it doesn't look good for them in November. I'll say that. And it's funny because I keep thinking about, you know, what's their out. And I keep hearing more and more rumblings of Michelle Obama's name keeps popping up more and more in my search, like my algorithm for Twitter and social media and stuff.
Am I gonna own Tom Bevin, like a
new car? I don't know.
A dinner?
Yeah.
And certainly a bottle of wine to make up for all the bottles of wine that he hasn't paid Carl Cannon? Yeah, okay. that's amazing. I hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, Michelle could do worse. I mean, if she runs for president to save the Democratic Party, would this be the first time she was really ever truly proud of her country if she wins? And if she doesn't win, well, she could go back to being the same mean Michelle, right?
No, she's go high, Michelle. Remember, they go low, we go
high. Oh, yeah, she goes high. Speaking of going high.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lynn Sweet, you know Lynn Sweet from the Sun-Times?
Sure.
She did a typical Lynn Sweet story, which, and I've known her for years. And as
good people.
Pardon?
She's good people.
She's good people. We disagree on policy and stuff, but I've always liked her. I've always treated her professionally. And she had a story, a typical Lynn Sweet story about Tony Preckwinkle and Mayor Johnson.
Right.
She took a picture of Mayor Johnson and Tony Preckwinkle on the White House lawn. Okay. That's where it started. And then Evil John got in the way.
Yeah, so those of you who don't follow John on Twitter, you're missing out, but this is great.
Yeah, so Evil John got into it and wrote a snarky thing, and he did not give Lynn Sweet photo credit. I'm sorry, Lynn. I'm giving you full credit now. Here's what I wrote above the photo, which should have been cropped differently. I'm just not saying, but I'm not a photo editor. Here's what I said. They're both of them, you see Tony Preckwinkle standing there with the big feet and the big blue tweed suit, ill-fitting suit as always. And there's Brandon Johnson in a dark suit because he needs to have authority. He's scared to wear a light gray suit.
But he's brave enough to do brown shoes in the black suit, which is still kind of faux pas.
I'm not going to say. But the tweet is this. Isn't it nice that Chicago's mayor took his frail and elderly grandmama to the White House without Stacey Davis Gates? And immediately, Stacey Gates and all the lefties, because their heads started exploding, STFU, John, and they, with pictures of Bozo the Clown or something like, he doesn't live in Chicago. He lives in Indiana. You don't have to listen to him. Okay, fine. Okay, whatever. You know, you little lefties, go ahead. Go ahead, cry. Cry, you little snowflakes. But I'm not forcing them to write what I like, what I write.
Right, exactly.
I'm just tweeting like like, let's say I would be some union stooge on Libs of TikTok, you know,
right?
Union yes. stooge teacher on Libs of TikTok, making a cocktail or something, and doing a video of it. But Stacy got upset. Now, I don't have it in front of me because I really don't know how to use this newfangled tweet. What did she say?
The internet, John. It's going to stick around for a while.
Yeah, thank you.
So she responded, retweeted you. So that was kind enough for her to retweet. So that's good for engagement, and it'll boost numbers. But she retweets it with, "Whose responsibility is it at the assisted living center to keep cash from making crank tweets?" Which I have to admit is a very good tweet, John.
Very good, Stace. I'm tipping my hat to you.
Bravo.
She has a good sense, brother. Good sense of humor, and I give her credit. I just wanted I could add one thing. When are you going to release the audit?
Right.
What CTU won spent on the campaign and
on
mysterious building. Yeah. Mysterious building that I thought wasn't it supposed to go to senior living for see, that's where senior living was on her mind.
Right, exactly. It was supposed to be this senior retirement living for teachers.
What happened to that whole thing? Did it disappear?
I don't know.
Anyway.
Yeah. I have to ask Ossenberg about that.
In the meantime, here's the problem. Or maybe it's just an advantage, an opportunity. That is, this is Mutza of the Month time.
Yes, the sweetest time of the month.
Oh, it's so sweet. So, Stacy, what the bleep? I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. That's all good fun. But it's ridiculous what she's doing. I mean, this CTU, it just hasn't answered any questions about, you know, where's the fund? Where's our money going? And why are they spending so much money on candidates? And
wait a second. Are you actually trying to be a reporter here? No. Because the press corps, Chicago press corps, isn't interested in Lynn Sweet, for example, the grand dame of the press corps, is doing publicity stills for Mayor Johnson and Tony Preckwinkle.
That's
come
true.
On.
I know, that's true.
And then I don't know what the Tribune is doing. You know, who knows what they're doing?
I'm sure they're touting the SAG-AFTRA, or not that SAG-AFTRA, but the writer's strike coming to a close, or touting the movement happening in the labor strike with the auto workers. I mean, that's all they seem to cover right now. So that has nothing, no immediate balance. I mean, I know there's a production facility in Chicago, but that one is yet to be fully on strike.
I don't really care about that. I do care that I'm giving a hat tip to Jason Meissner, who did a tremendous story on the twins who were involved with El Chapo Guzman, the narcotics dealer. And it was superbly written and researched meticulously and comprehensive, which is why Jason Meissner is one of that newspaper's best,
sure,
if not the best. Yeah. But that still doesn't answer the question, what to do about Stacy.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, she puts herself in contention for the Moots of the Month, not because of that tweet, but that tweet kind of sells it. Maybe she knew it was coming. Maybe she, you know, she could smell the coolness in the air and realize that September's coming to a close. And she was hoping to become the Moots of the Month because, man, it's been a big month for her with her kid going to a private school and this debacle about the missing money and then no audits and the
yada, yada, yada. Somebody on Facebook, that's where I take the nominations. So somebody on Facebook wrote, "It must be Stacey Davis Gates." And then, "Here's a story to prove it." And then posted a Yahoo story on Stacey Gates. I said, "Well, maybe you could have tried this story." And I posted my own, but then I didn't engage
him. Selling.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, the Mutza is John, the golden Mutza, John, the backstory on the actual word But the concept is that whoever's the biggest idiot of the month, right? I mean, that's the gist.
Yeah, well, the mutsa is a standard Greek insult, which I don't want to get into. But other people who don't like me, or let's say people who are envious of me because I'm thin now, I'm skinny and rich because of all the subscribers and coming in and thousands of them coming over all the time. And one of those people, Eric Zorn, is a little upset, and he's constantly saying, "Well, I don't know about, you know, under assumed names of Twitter identity,
right?
So I don't know if it's him or Judge Dibbs,
right?
Right? I remember when he claimed that Judge Dibbs, how dare John Cass try to claim that he invented Dibbs, and then he had to admit that I did." but now he's saying that Mutsa is scatological and bring up scatological references because of what happened to prisoners who were, you know, paraded through the streets of Istanbul or Constantinople back in the day. I'm not going to get into such petty things. All I'm going to say is Stacey Gates, Brandon Johnson. Oh, but wait, what about Bob Menendez?
Oh my gosh, King Mutsa.
What about the Mutsa for him? Maybe we should give Stacey Gates a break and let her escape because she likes to play and have fun, and give it to Menendez because what did he have? $500,000 in cash, loose cash in his house and car.
Yeah. Gold bars.
What the?
I mean, that's the funny thing. I mean, this guy, I mean, I feel like this is Bob Menendez goes down part two, Electric Boogaloo. I mean, the first time, it was all held up on like a technicality, and he was
indicted and tried and then walked because it wasn't, they couldn't get a conviction.
Mm-hmm.
But then you'd think after that,
he'd clean up
after
his
that, that cover maybe
his
he,
tracks.
Well, maybe he wouldn't be, you know, playing that game, like the foreign policy Senate chairman. Like, who was that other? Oh, wasn't Joe Biden Senate chairman of that? What? Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't want to get all the lefties, give them
God,
all.
Don't be spurious.
Ammunition. Yeah.
Ammunition. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. This is a guy who. Walking, talking, you know, billboard for what's wrong with politics and people in politics.
Wait, and they're running around now having they've just been polled. The Democrats have been polled.
Yes.
And
they don't
like him. Their hair's on fire. And also, you know, they don't like the First Amendment. They don't want you to have freedom of speech. 75% of them, or 37%, whatever. I forgot the number now. I'm so confused with all this newfangled internet stuff. That a sizable proportion of them oppose freedom of speech. So what can I say now that I'm speaking freely on my own? Oh my
idea, it's bad. I see like this that Democrats are, you know, looking outside their front window. And they see Republicans in their eyes on across the street, and they think to see the house is on fire and the grass is overgrown. They look in their backyard and it's the exact same landscape.
I know how they feel because I live in the heads of the liberal left here in Chicago, and they're constantly, I live there rent free, and they're constantly freaking out. Like, what is he saying? What is Cass saying? And they have to tweet and get their Twitter thumbs oiled up. And then they have to show Stacey Davis Gates that they did a good job. And it's so pathetic. It's really, but you know what? It's not as pathetic as my beloved Chicago Bears or the beloved Chicago Fire.
John, the Chicago Fire, even if they're terrible, it was a good night out. You took us out with your family the other night, and it was a fantastic evening. We had dinner, and it was and the game, and it was beautiful, and it was a grand old time. Even if they were terrible,
2-2. They should have won it, but they tied it 2-2. A draw. Yeah,
a draw. Yes.
1 point. They didn't need to give that away. But you know, the next day, at least Jeff was there, because the last year when we went together,
right.
Jeff, me, Betty, and Christine, it was the Soldier Field was like 100 degrees.
Yeah.
We almost literally 100% died.
Humidity. Yeah. It was brutal.
And then what happened to the
right? It was fireworks. So hot and humid. The after show fireworks program went off with only one firework, and it was like, well, technical difficulties. Come back next year.
A fizzling little fart of a firecracker, like that's all, yeah. And it was gone.
Yeah,
it was pathetic. So, who do we have coming up? Greg Hansen?
So, I mean, Cass and I, you know, give it our update here on what's going on, but we want to bring you. Now, Dr. Greg Gansky, who if you follow johncastnews.com, which I'm sure you do and you should, wrote a piece a couple of weeks back over the summer about parents and gender, quote, gender-affirming medical procedures and surgeries and all that kind of stuff, and kind of picked apart the logic on it and the ethical natures of it. And in doing so, got a little bit of pushback and a little bit of flack from, you know, people as it happens. So some
gave him flack, but I don't. But he also got his point out that questioning whether or not it was gender affirming care or child abuse.
Right.
And my view, it's child abuse. I mean, if they're 18 years old or 19 and they're majority age, they want to do that to their bodies. Be my guest. I'm not going to stop you. But when you're an 8-year-old boy and your mommy is divorcing her daddy, and she's angry, and some teacher starts talking to them about castration, I don't think it's a wise move. Wait until the kid's old enough to wreak your vengeance upon the father. Okay, that's all I say about that.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a parent, and I can never, you know, I always feel off trying to impose right or wrong, but you're right. My underlying point being that this is one of those kind of obvious ones where I'm like, you know, we don't let kids decide lots of things until they're fully, you know, aware and cognizant of what, you know, impacts and ramifications are. We know kids brains don't fully develop until like the age of 25, and that, you know, there are all sorts of crazy things that happen that can, you know, alter a child's, you know, mental stability later in life. I feel this is not the hill and the battle that people should be living and dying on. It seems just crazy to me, but you know, again, not a parent. I can see the parents being, you know, trying to make their case and say that they love their kid. But
I know they do, and they want to say that, and that's fine. I don't, you know what I want to live in the mind of Stacey Davis Gates and all her followers in CTU Local One.
Sure.
I think, and all the left wing of Chicago that's basically tearing Chicago up and tearing it apart. And we have Greg Gansky coming up right now. There's me and you and Jeff Carlin of WGN News and John Cass of johncassnews.com. And where are you with Stacey Davis Gates giving me mean tweets and Joe Biden's wheels falling off his bus? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way. Absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun, he sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Reading the column by Greg Gansky that we posted at John Cass News with permission from the Des Moines Register. Mother chooses life of baby over her own. How does this fit into the abortion debate? It was a heartbreaking story about a Dr. Gansky, Greg Gansky, former congressman and doctor, had a patient who had the Hobson's choice before her. She was suffering from cancer, and she was pregnant, and she had to decide her life or the child's life. And she chose heroically life. She chose her baby's life, as I think many, many, many mothers would do. Most mothers would do. It's a terrible thing to have to choose, but she had to do it. And Dr. Gansky, Greg Gansky, our my friend and colleague and the writer of this column, did not know that years ago, my priests at the Holy Apostle Church went through the same thing. His daughter, Sophia, had to make that choice, that terrible choice between her own life and that of her baby. And she chose the baby. And so that's why Dr. Gansky, when Betty and I read this column, when we asked to repost it, I just want to thank you so much for standing up for life. Thank you so much, sir.
Well, thanks for republishing it. You know, as you mentioned, your priest's daughter faced a similar situation. And since publishing the article, I received an email from a fellow plastic surgeon who had a patient that fit exactly the same situation. She was midway through her pregnancy. She developed breast cancer. The recommendation was that she start chemotherapy and maybe radiation and other surgical treatment just immediately.
Right.
But this would have required then, because the chemotherapy would have been terrible for the life of the baby, would have required an abortion. And so my patient, as you say, made the decision not to undergo the immediate treatment for her breast cancer, but to go ahead and deliver the baby. The problem is that in pregnancy, you know, the hormones are very strong. Her tumor was hormone responsive, and the tumor just went crazy. And so after she delivered a normal, healthy, beautiful baby, not too long afterwards, she passed away. And this is, you know, not a unique story. You know, it was heartbreaking. She already had a couple other children. So she left her husband with three young children, a baby, and the other two children. You know, this came to mind when I was watching the Republican presidential debate, and most of the, or at least a lot of the candidates had came out in favor of a federal 15-week ban on abortion, with exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. And I started thinking about this, and it was in contrast to the Democrats who, when Nancy Pelosi was speaker, actually passed a bill that would have expanded abortion rights and forbid the limiting abortion to less than 24 weeks or viability. I wanted to then look at the legal aspects of either choices. And it seems to me that there isn't really a constitutional, now after the Dobbs decision, a constitutional justification for either the Democrats passing their bill to expand abortion or the Republicans passing a national bill to restrict it. The Supreme Court ruled that this was not a constitutional protection the abortion issue was not in the Constitution. And furthermore, for many, many years as a congressman, I could see that the constitutional limits on federal action had been expanded under the Commerce Clause, which had been for quite a while used to expand federal authority in many different areas, but on sort of many times the flimsy excuse of this being a matter of interstate commerce. I was on the Energy and Commerce Committee. Well, in the last, with this court in the last 10, 15, 20 years, that interpretation of the Commerce Clause has been significantly restricted to activities that are actually related to interstate commerce, which, of course, abortion is not. So the point of my article, besides telling the heart-wrenching story, was basically to say that this is a lot of, the abortion issue is going to be a lot of sound and fury, meaning not much in the end. The Democrats are going to be pushing for a federal law to expand abortion rights, Republicans maybe to restrict them at a federal level, although that's a matter of some debate in the Republican Party. But when push comes to shove, I don't think that that either law will stand the test, especially with this court, of being constitutional. So that's something that I think that most people don't realize. And I also wanted to point out in the article that under current law, state law across the entire country, all the various permutations of abortion law, my patient would have been allowed to have had an abortion if she had chosen to. That is current law. So the Democrats can't say that, well, you know, the Republicans passing a law to ban abortion would have kept my patient from having a choice. In fact, there were some comments in the Des Moines Register that that this is just an example of Republicans wanting to limit a woman's choice. But in this case, because almost all state laws allow for an exception on abortion in order to save the life of the mother, that you know, this lady would still have that choice. She just decided to choose the life of her baby rather than her own.
And we've seen it, to your point, Doctor, that you know, even Ohio, they're trying to push stronger and more aggressive, if you will, you know, anti-abortion laws, and there was a swing kind of back away from that a little bit. And when you ask the average person, they don't really even, I mean, and not, you know, I'm not us, President's Company excluded, but they don't, they know what they want, but they can't quite put it into words. And like you said, the legal standing doesn't seem to even be close to being, I mean, the argument, it's case in Dobbs, even someone like a Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that argument was flawed and had, you know, had real no standing over the life or death question. It was really more about, you're trying to be private and keep your personal dealings to yourself. And ultimately that's what it fell. Do you see in Iowa, because everyone talks about Iowa being, you know, a bellwether, do you see a support? I mean, you said you got some emails and some feedback. What's the mix there been like?
The Iowa legislature, which is Republican controlled, we have a strong Republican governor, passed a law that would limit abortion to the first 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That is currently before the Iowa is heading to the Iowa Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
I predict that the court, which largely consists of Republican appointed members, will not uphold a 6-week ban.
Mm-hmm.
For reasons that, among others, some women or many women may not even know that they're pregnant at that time.
Sure.
My recommendation to the governor was that if the Iowa law is struck down, the 6-week Iowa law is shut down, mm-hmm. then the Iowa legislature, she'd bring the Iowa legislature back into session and pass another law that would be, say, at 12 weeks or 15 weeks. And so it's kind of up in limbo
sure.
here in Iowa, as it is in several other places.
On another subject, I, by the way, personally, I agree with you, Dr. that Greg, that conservative principles will win out in this debate, and the court may not very well in Iowa may not very well support a 6-week ban. I just don't see that as viable either. Although I am 100% life, I just understand the court and the Constitution to be at odds here.
Right.
You know, I wrote an op-ed for the Register before when the Alito draft was leaked, and I predicted that the Supreme Court would do away with Roe v. Wade. And I think that this whole issue of abortion and politics is kind of like the fourth rail of politics. So the third rail being Medicare, Social Security, the fourth is is of abortion.
Yeah. Right.
And it reminds me of when I was in Congress, Tom DeLay did an amendment. This was early on my first term, did an amendment that would have taken away funding for OBGYN residencies that taught their residents how to do a DNC. And I am pro-life, but I'm also a physician. And I said, this is kind of crazy because an OBGYN needs to know how to do a DNC, most of which are for non-abortion reasons,
right,
such as taking care of a woman who had a miscarriage. And so I went around to my colleagues explaining this. And I'll never forget when I went in to see Pat Roberts, who was a chairman of the Ag Committee and a good friend, pretty witty guy. He became a senator from Kansas. And I'm explaining this to the abortion, this issue, this aspect of abortion legislation. And he said, you know, Greg, what you're saying, it makes perfect sense. I understand what you're saying, but you know, when I first came to Congress, this abortion issue was, you know, like a little meandering, slow stream. And now it's become a raging torrent. And so everyone is in their own little boat. You either jump to what the pro-life people say, or you jump to what the pro-choice people say, and you don't dare get out of your boat. Because you'll drown in that raging torrent.
Sure.
And then I had the spokeslady for the executive director from the Iowa Right to Life group come in and see me. And she said, Dr. Kiansky, we understand what you're saying. We appreciate that. We just would hope that you don't take the lead on this. Well, I said, I think I have an obligation to explain something about what this is would really have an effect on. And so I went ahead and I opposed it on the floor, and I lost on the floor, but I won the war because when it went to the Senate and then a conference, the delay provision was dropped. But you know, even though I had a 90% plus pro-life rating, at one time in the future when I ran for the Senate, I had a primary opponent, and he kind of picked up on the fact that I just wouldn't jump one way or the other, but would look at the issue and that what it meant. That maybe hurt me a little bit in that race, but that's okay. You know, I didn't go to Congress to be there for life. And
that's the definition of being Iowa nice. That's Iowa nice.
There it is.
But listen, you also you can't help but get yourself involved in controversies. A while ago, I heard you on our friend Dan Proft's radio program talking about another column that you wrote at John Cass News. Is it science or child abuse? Part two, because there was part one. And part two is also about America clinging to the delusion, that's my editorializing, that it is not child abuse as we force them to go through gender affirming care in terms of surgery for children. Like one of those gruesome procedures, I can't even say them on the morning. But you also brought that subject up and went after it. And I just want to say, for a guy who's so Iowa nice, you seem to end up into controversies all the time.
Well, I guess I would take an independent stand sometimes for my own party. But on this issue of gender changing, some people call it gender affirming.
I would not, but they do.
That's a bad term. But
jumbo shrimp.
On this issue, look, I mean, I bet you and I and Jeff agree that if somebody is an adult and they make the decision that they want to change their gender identity and their physical aspects,
right?
You know, and they're an adult and they look into it, fine, go ahead. The problem that I see that I wrote about was that, you know, their children are being identified, quote unquote, and then being led into treatment as minors and, you know, having their breasts removed or being castrated as minors.
Yeah.
And I think there's quite a bit of evidence coming out that this type of grooming is going to be very detrimental to people, and that we are starting to see many, many of these people after they become adults and they change their minds. Unfortunately, some of the surgery is irreversible.
And so, some of it can't, you know, much of it can't be reversed.
Exactly.
What happens is people crack up. You know, I don't know what the medical terminology is for cracking up, but and with access to weapons, the guns, sometimes they grab them. And I'm worried about what happened in, where was it, Nashville, Tennessee? Just a few months ago, where the young woman or former woman who became a man or something, or vice versa, that's confusing, but shot at a Christian school, killing several children.
Right.
And we still don't know. She wrote a manifesto, and we still don't know. We haven't read it. It hasn't been released because I don't know why. What, you can't release something?
Because it's probably not politically correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. I mean, it's. I think the scarier thing, Doctor, and I'd love to get your take on this, is it. You've got these stories popping up around the country of schools where, you know, a kid says something at school, and then a teacher and a quote unquote advocate hears it, and then the next thing you know, the kids go being told to go into the boys' bathroom or an alternate bathroom, they're hiding it from the parents because the parents aren't going to agree with that, maybe the decision. And then the parents are being held in contempt for not supporting their child and losing access to their child. How does that even make sense? How do we even get to the point where that logic is useful?
There are some things going on in the country that I never thought I would see, that are so crazy that almost every day something mm-hmm. comes up that makes you shake your head. At least we in Iowa, a lot of us shake our heads. I have a 94-year-old mother. I was with her yesterday watching the Iowa-Iowa State football game, and she was bringing up some of these same issues that we have been talking about, and just shakes her head. She just can't believe that these things are happening. And so my response is, you know, you do what you can do. And not all of us are in positions of power where we can pass legislation or do things like that. But we can talk to our friends.
Yeah.
Some people are afraid to talk about any of this. They feel very badly that we're heading in the wrong direction. But I know doctors, a lot of doctors, will not talk about this gender issue with their colleagues because they might lose their jobs and be labeled transphobes. It's really pernicious. And that's why I appreciate your column, John, because, well, you tackle these issues. And besides being a great writer, I enjoy reading your column.
I think once I was freed from the socialists at the Chicago Tribune, I became more of a free man. And there's one thing about free men, Doctor. When you see them in a steakhouse and they collapse on a sidewalk in the South Street, it's always good to have two physicians next to you to protect you and Chris Chelios to protect you from yourself. I have to thank you very much for that.
We were just ecstatic when we saw you in the emergency room afterwards that you were doing fine. And
you're so kind.
Maybe your chemicals were just a little off, but whatever. That was a really fun dinner, and we really appreciated it.
It really opened my eyes, Jeff, to see here's the gentleman, Dr. Gansky, very kind, gentle, Iowa nice. And then in the emergency room, he's like peppering the physicians with questions like about this sodium, that levels and all that. He's hitting them with all sorts of questions like taking command of the Starship Enterprise behind the Starship. You know, not really like a leaky vessel, you know?
Yes, that's Casso, yeah.
That's it. Casso, like, popped a few leaks. But thanks so much. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Doctor, thanks for being here on the Chicago Way, and thank you for writing that column. And I look forward to your next offering, and I can't wait to read it. And thanks so much for everything.
Well, keep up the good work, John.
Okay, Doctor. Thank you. Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye.
Bye. For Greg Gansky, former congressman, physician, plastic surgeon, and writer. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio and friend of cats, friend of pies, blah, blah, blah. He's a wonderful man and all that. And Blackhawk fan who thrills to the mention of Chris Chelios anytime I can squeeze it in. So that's why I squoze it into the story about me on the sidewalk. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, Greek Orthodox Christian, and I was a friend of Bill Shiganos, my priest. And when Greg Gansky wrote that column, I thought of his daughter, Sophia. Thanks for joining us. And talk to you next time on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.